Hello and welcome to Global Research Unlocked, where we discuss what's rising from growth industries to rising risks and opportunities in global markets. I'm TJ Thornton, Head of Product Marketing at BofA Global Research, and we're recording this episode on Monday, March 11, 2024.
I think the improvement in financial conditions leads us to think the risks around our inflation outlook are still to the upside, and we have an inflation path that is, say, less favorable than does the Fed and does the market. We still think inflation comes down, but we have a stickier forecast than most. And I think any dramatic easing in financial conditions just means that process may take longer.
At the start of this year, rates markets priced in multiple Fed cuts by June, and now the market is looking for just one. And even that is the subject of debate. Especially in January, economic data was better than expected. January CPI surprised to the upside, and over the last few months, the pace of improvement in inflation has slowed. Joining us today to discuss the balance of economic data and whether we can still expect rate cuts despite a fairly positive economic backdrop is Mike Gapin, head of U.S. economics for BofA Global Research. Thanks, Mike, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, TJ.
So, Mike, there are a number of voices out there suggesting that the Fed may not cut at all this year. You're looking for cuts to start around the middle of the year, as is markets. How do you respond to those who say the economy is just too strong, that inflation is still too high for cuts?
I would respond initially by saying I don't think the economy is too strong. There has been a debate about whether the economy is reaccelerating as we move into 2024. And we have been arguing that some of that strength was likely more statistical than real, given the difficulty in seasonally adjusting the economy around the end of the year. And I think most of the February data that has come in has been consistent with the economy slowing down as opposed to reaccelerating. There's a series of soft data points like the ISM manufacturing and ISM services data, but also hard data on factory orders, durables orders, inventories, the trade balance. All of that suggests, no, the economy is not reaccelerating. It's certainly resilient, but it doesn't appear to be reaccelerating. Growth in the first quarter, we're tracking it a little bit above two. Other GDP tracking estimates are around 2%. And that would be a slowdown from the slightly better than 3% rate observed in the fourth quarter and close to 5% observed in the third quarter. So my first response would be to say that it doesn't appear to me that the economy is too strong. But importantly, to your question of, is inflation too high for cuts? The important thing to answer then is essentially, is the economy, it's still pretty healthy, the labor market is still healthy, is it generating overheating effects? And I think right now the answer is no. We think inflation will be coming down. We've long held the view that inflation will be sticky on the way down, but we don't think the economy is reaccelerating. A tight labor market doesn't seem to be creating a resurgence in wage pressures, and inflation is coming down. It's just coming down slowly. All of that does warrant a cutting cycle to start at some point. Yes, we do think it starts around the middle of the year. Maybe it comes a little later. We'll see. But I think the direction of travel is one where the Fed can cut into this environment so long as the economy does not exhibit overheating effects.
Okay. And Mike, consistent with what you just said about some of the more recent data, which was a little bit soft, the BofA Institute just released a note which flags some softening in spending for lower income consumers. This is interesting because it seems like the job market had been particularly strong for lower income jobs. People have pointed to wage inflation as a reason why inflation may take longer to get to the Fed's target. And yet, between spending and some other data that they included, there are some signs of weakening in the job market, even outside of these tech and white collar jobs. What's your view on labor markets here? And do you think we'll get enough normalization to get inflation all the way to the Fed's target? Because it is so critical with goods prices already having come off so much.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And the view on the labor market is a crucial one. Our view is that the labor market remains healthy, but it's cooling. Now, on one hand, It does look like the rate of hiring has picked up. The February employment data did contain downward revisions to January and December, but even with those downward revisions, the three-month average change in non-farm payrolls is around 265,000. Those are very robust numbers by any historical standard, and it's a faster pace of hiring than was the case through most of the second half of last year. So the hiring rate has picked up, but there were a number of other components to this report that suggest the labor market is cooling on the margin. Average hourly earnings were up only 1/10 on the month. Average weekly hours did move higher, we think retracing some of the weather-related effects from January. But growth in hours worked has slowed down, and it's running near its softest pace during the recovery period following COVID. And some of the underlying flow data, those moving from unemployment to employment, for example, were quite weak on the month. Again, our view on the labor market is similar to our view on GDP and other activity, that the labor market is healthy in its current state. The labor market, I think, can be described as tight, with an unemployment rate at multi-decade lows. And there's still evidence of very strong hiring. But again, the question is it leading to overheating effects? Is it causing wage growth to accelerate in a way that would make you be worried about our outlook for disinflation? And I think the balance of the data and the labor market data says it looks like the labor market's cooling. There's a long way to go to get it into better balance, but it's moving in that direction. And right now, the wage data, it's running at about 4% year on year. That's not very far from what the Fed would see as consistent with 2% inflation outcomes. They'd like to see that number somewhere around 3.5%. We're not all that far from it.
Okay, Mike, another observation that people have made as it relates to Fed cuts is, of course, that U.S. equities are at all-time highs. And not just that, the S&P's up 30% over last year, the NASDAQ's up even more. Credit spreads are tight. High-yield issuance has really picked up since the end of last year. Does this improvement in financial conditions challenge both the disinflation story or the expectation for Fed cuts?
That's a great question. Here I will take the other side to the arguments I've just made and say, yes, I think it does challenge the story. In particular, some important data arrived last week on this component here that household net worth, for example, was up about $4.8 trillion in the fourth quarter, and it's up about $39 trillion since the pandemic started. That's almost 1.5% of GDP. On one hand, you would expect financial conditions to ease if the Fed is signaling that it's likely on the verge of beginning a rate cut cycle, but the Fed has to balance the implications of thinking inflation's come down, we need to reduce the restrictiveness of our policy stance. But what does that do, to your point? It eases financial conditions, and there are feedback effects, whether that's to the strength of business spending, business investment and borrowing, or the state of household balance sheets. And one of the things that has kept the consumer spending and the economy in an expansion phase in the post-COVID period has been very strong balance sheets and strong household net worth. It's trickled down into a strong consumer spending profile. So yeah, I think the improvement in financial conditions leads us to think the risks around our inflation outlook are still to the upside. And we have an inflation path that is, say, less favorable than does the Fed and does the market. We still think inflation comes down, but we have a stickier forecast than most. And I think any dramatic easing and financial conditions just means that process may take longer.
Got it. And I was on an email chain with you, I think last week, on one of these topics, but actually the portion of wealth, stock market wealth that gets spent is pretty small. This is far from one-to-one where your stock portfolio goes up and you spend it.
That's right. The empirical evidence, and this is evidence over many decades, would be that the conclusion is for every dollar increase in net wealth, households tend to increase their level of consumption or target consumption by about 3 cents. The wealth effect is not large, but it is statistically significant. And when you're talking about a $39 trillion increase in household net worth, it'll have some meaningful impacts over time. But you're right, it's not one for one. it's nowhere near one for one, but it is a statistically significant contributor to how much households want to spend out of current income and how far they're willing to push the saving rate lower at the same time. Because the wealthier you are, the more you're willing to consume out of current income and push the saving rate lower. And that's exactly what we've been seeing.
Got it. Okay. I wanted to talk about recent revisions, your recent revisions to GDP. You recently took up your 2024 US GDP forecast, but you actually look for growth to slow in 25. So briefly, what were the main drivers of the higher 24 number? And then why such a slowdown in 25?
I think the story for us here is really just the rebound in the labor force, how quickly the labor force has rebounded. And that's come in two forms. The rebound in participation rates, which is really a return of the domestic workforce to the labor market. We're back to participation rates for the 16 to 54-year-olds that make up most of the labor force. They're back to, if not slightly above, pre-pandemic levels. That rapid rebound has meant a surge in the labor force. On top of that has been the return of net migration to levels that we haven't seen since 2015. Both of these things meant a recovery in the labor force that has done three important things. It's helped the economy grow while also meaning lower peak unemployment rates, and it's been a supply side shock, so it's also allowed inflation to come down. When we were transitioning from the end of last year into this year, it still felt like that story had legs and that there's still some catch-up effect in hiring in front of us. And given where participation rates and net migration are now, I just felt that we were too light in the growth outlook. But now it appears we've seen enough evidence that the rebound in labor force is giving us enough positive supply forces that it made sense to mark up growth while also opening the door to Fed cuts. And in effect, in your growth outlook, that pulls forward growth. We previously had growth slowing down this year and recovering next, but we just pulled all of that forward, which means we're stronger in 2024 and a little weaker in 2025. It's no real fundamental change in where the economy should be by the end of 2025. It's just a front loading of that growth. But the answer to your question has been the strength and the rebound of the labor force. It looks like that's continuing into 2024 at a strong enough pace to keep the economy growing. Let's call it roughly a 2.5% rate this year, and maybe something closer to 2% next year.
Okay, and last question, Mike. U.S. strategist Savita Subramanian has a bullish view on stocks. One of the positives she's pointed to is this possibility of a productivity boom. Companies over the last several years were forced to invest because labor was so scarce, because there was such wage growth. So that will lead to better productivity in theory. And then, of course, AI also could boost productivity. And we've heard anecdotes about that. But are we seeing any evidence of this in the numbers? And do you think it could be ahead of us?
Economists look at types of data points and think, well, what movement can be explained by cyclical forces? What constitutes an underlying change in the trend? Productivity has picked up in the U.S. economy over the past few quarters. But what I think that is about the cyclical evolution of the economy during the COVID pandemic cycle. At first, as everyone remembers, we rotated to goods and demand for goods was strong and we laid off a lot of workers. Well, mechanically, that increases productivity. Then as the economy reopened and we rebalanced back to services and we're spending more on services and we rehired a lot of workers into services, productivity fell on a cyclical basis because services are low productivity sectors. And I think what we've been seeing over the past few quarters is simply the economy is normalizing after the pandemic. Consumer spending shares are getting back to normal and the rotation to services is fading. We've had a very unusual cyclical cycle and it's finishing here with some slightly stronger productivity numbers. But when we apply our statistical models here, there's really no evidence at present that underlying trend productivity has picked up. Now, that doesn't mean it won't. I think Savita tells a very compelling story, and I would agree with it, that the crowding in of domestic manufacturing investment, reshoring, onshoring, friendshoring, artificial intelligence, it all sounds familiar and has echoes back to the tech boom of the mid-90s. I think the issue for me in the macro data is that usually takes years to develop in a way that we can actually see it. There's a diffusion process where technology gets adopted, and it usually takes years for these innovations in order to boost trend productivity growth. So we're not saying it can't rise. Again, I think there's a compelling story as to why it may. But right now, I think most of the fluctuation in productivity has been cyclical. And I think any improvement in trend productivity is likely still in front of us. It may take several years or more for that to be realized in the data.
Okay, Mike, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you, TJ.
On the surface, some of the data this year has suggested that the U.S. economy might be accelerating. But looking a bit deeper, Mike doesn't think that's the case. Seasonal adjustment factors helped January, and much of the February data suggests a modest slowdown. On inflation, many remain skeptical that it will come down enough. Indeed, our inflation numbers are above consensus. But we still expect disinflation and point out that wage growth is plus 4%, which is not far from where the Fed wants it to be. Still, financial conditions, equity market strength, these things should help keep inflation sticky, but shouldn't reverse the downward trend. Lastly, the productivity story is a really important one for markets. Improved trend productivity isn't showing up in the economic data yet, but Mike agrees there's reason to believe that it will show up over the next few years. Thanks for joining us today.
Bank of America and B of A Securities are the marketing names for the global banking businesses and global markets businesses, which includes B of A Global Research of Bank of America Corporation. Lending, derivatives, and other commercial banking activities are performed globally by banking affiliates of Bank of America Corporation, including Bank of America N.A., member FDIC. Securities, trading, research, strategic advisory, and other investment banking and markets activities are performed globally by affiliates of Bank of America Corporation, including in the United States, B of A Securities, Inc., a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC, and in other jurisdictions by locally registered entities. Copyright 2024 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.